for metamorphosing America, the world's exemplary democracy, into a national security state with global dominance. Robert Kadlec, Let the Games Begin. Bioweapons expert Robert P. Kadlec is an American physician and retired colonel in the United States Air Force who served as Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services for Preparedness and Response from August 2017 until January 2021, and who managed the COVID-19 crisis during the Trump administration. Second only to his longtime crony and comrade-in-arms Anthony Fauci, Robert Kadlec played an historic leadership role in fomenting the contagious logic that infectious disease posed a national security threat requiring a militarized response. Since the 1993 World Trade Center terror attack, Kadlec had been evangelizing about an imminent anthrax attack that would doom the American way of life. In the mid-1990s, Kadlec served as part of an elite Air Force operations unit of UN weapons inspectors, fruitlessly hunting the Iraqi desert for Saddam Hussein's suspected stores of anthrax and botulism following the first Persian Gulf War. At 2:47 in the early morning of February 1, 2020, 4 hours after his loyal grantee, virologist Christian Anderson, informed Dr. Fauci that he and other leading biologists believed that the genetic sequence responsible for the furin cleave on the virus's spike protein, the peculiar structure that allows the organism to bind tightly to and infect cells with the ACE2 receptor, was highly unlikely to be the product of natural selection, Dr. Anthony Fauci fired a carefully worded email to Kadlec. Dr. Fauci's other emails from that evening suggest that he was intensely worried that the Chinese experiments that may have created this striation in the novel coronavirus would bear his fingerprints. If Dr. Fauci's gain-of-function research had indeed minted COVID-19, then Kadlec would also be implicated. Kadlec served on the small so-called P3CO committee charged with approving NIH's gain-of-function experiments, and it is clear from Dr. Fauci's email that the subject was also on Kadlec's mind. Dr. Fauci attached an article to his email to Kadlec. It was Bat Lady Xi Zhengli's deceitful effort to downplay the laboratory leak hypothesis. Bob, this just came out today, Dr. Fauci told his gain-of-function confederate, gives a balanced view. Subsequent events proved that the author of that article was deliberately lying to conceal the Wuhan lab's manipulation of coronavirus pathogens that were nearly identical to the microbe that caused COVID-19. Both Kadlec and Fauci had been involved, for over a decade, in promoting and funding these dangerous experiments through NIAID and the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, BARDA, the biosecurity funding agency that Kadlec had helped create, including funneling millions of dollars in U.S. funding to Xi, the hapless writer of the exculpatory article. Dr. Fauci's email shows these two technocrats and others patching together evidence for the dubious official story that they would tell the world. Over the next few weeks, Dr. Fauci would pull the reliable old levers that he had manipulated for decades to transform convenient canards into official orthodoxies. The contrived cosmologies he thereby constructed would hold for a full year before they finally began to unravel. Kadlec is a Dr. Strangelove knockoff with deep ties to spy agencies, Big Pharma, the Pentagon, and military contractors who profiteer from the spread of bioweapons alarmism. Intelligence agency historian and journalist Whitney Webb describes Kadlec as a man enmeshed in the world of intelligence, military intelligence, and corporate corruption, dutifully fulfilling the vision of his friends in high places and behind closed doors. In 1998, Cadlec created an internal strategy paper for the Pentagon, promoting the development of pandemic pathogens as a stealth weapon that the Pentagon could deploy against its enemies without leaving fingerprints. Biological weapons under the cover of an endemic or natural disease occurrence provides an attacker the potential for plausible denial. Biological warfare's potential to create significant economic losses and consequent political instability, coupled with plausible deniability, exceeds the possibilities of any other human weapon, he wrote. Cadlec, in 1999, organized his paranoia into several illustrative scenarios to demonstrate the United States' vulnerability to biological attack. In one of Cadlec's doomsday fantasies dubbed Corn Terrorism, China clandestinely sprays corn seed blight over the Midwest from commercial airliners. Cadlec warns China gains significant corn market share and tens of billions of dollars of additional profits from their crop, while leaving the U.S. Corn Belt in ruin. Another Cadlec scenario, titled Lousy Wine, envisions disgruntled European winemakers covertly releasing grape lice concealed in cans of pâté to target California wine producers. In an April 2001 study for the National Defense University National War College, Cadlec urgently recommended the creation of a strategic national stockpile to warehouse countermeasures including vaccines and antibiotics, and recommended regulatory changes to provide for mandatory vaccinations and coercive quarantines in the event of a pandemic. Those ideas helped win him an appointment as Special Assistant for Biodefense Planning to President George W. Bush after the post-September 11th anthrax attacks later that same year. From this sinecure, Cadlec's fervent lobbying persuaded Congress to establish a strategic national stockpile, whose contents are currently worth $7 billion. Cadlec would come to control purchases for that stockpile and, following the lead of his comrades Bill Gates and Tony Fauci, he would use that power to enrich his vaccine industry friends and sideline public health. As journalist Alexis Baden-Mayer observed, Cadlec created the biodefense industrial complex as we know it, and he rules it like a czar. The Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci-funded biosecurity. Let the war games begin. In 1999, Dr. Cadlec organized a simulation of a smallpox terrorist attack on U.S. soil for a joint exercise by the newly formed Johns Hopkins Center for Civilian Biodefense Strategies and the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. The founder of the center was D.A. Henderson, famed for leading the program that eradicated smallpox in 1977. The senior fellow and co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Center was a CIA spook and pharmaceutical industry lobbyist named Tara O'Toole. She took over as chief when Henderson left. The third center director was Tom Inglesby, who remains in that role. In 1999, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation committed $20 million to Johns Hopkins to establish the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population and Reproductive Health. For the next two decades, Gates would direct a vast stream of funding to the enterprise of elevating biosecurity as the national priority. Some of his most visible investments funded a series of simulations presided over by Inglesby at his Johns Hopkins Center. Those simulations would make Inglesby the congenial face of biosecurity paranoia, feed the burgeoning biodefense industry, and help lay the foundation for the modern security state. The deal pipeline from NIH and NIAID to Johns Hopkins, an astonishing $13 billion since 2001, dwarfs Gates' contributions to the school. But shoddy or perhaps deliberately obscure reporting makes it nearly impossible to determine how many of these dollars flowed to Inglesby and his center. Cadlick's simulations, and over a dozen that would succeed it over the next 20-plus years, many under Bill Gates's direction, shared common features. None of them emphasized protecting public health by showing Americans how to bolster their immune systems, to eat well, to lose weight, to exercise, to maintain vitamin D levels, and to avoid chemical exposure. None of these focused on devising the vital communications infrastructures to link frontline doctors during a pandemic or to facilitate the development and refinement of optimal treatment protocols. None of these dealt seriously with the need to identify off-the-shelf, now known as repurposed therapeutic drugs, to mitigate fatalities and to shorten a pandemic's duration. None of them considered ways to isolate the sick and protect the vulnerable, or how to shield people in nursing homes and other institutions from infection. None of them questioned the efficacy of masks, lockdowns, and social distancing in reducing casualties. None of them engaged in soul-searching about how to preserve constitutional rights during a global pandemic. Instead, the simulations wargamed how to use police powers to detain and quarantine citizens, how to impose martial law, how to control messaging by deploying propaganda, how to employ censorship to silence dissent, and how to mandate masks, lockdowns, and coercive vaccinations, and conduct track and trace surveillance among potentially reluctant populations. Coercion should be the last strategy to consider in a pandemic, remarked physician and biological warfare expert Merrill Nass, MD. If you have a remedy that works, people will flock to get it. It's troubling that the first and only option was creating a police state. The still unsolved mystery of the post-9/11 anthrax attacks. Contemporaneously with Johns Hopkins' smallpox simulation, the Pentagon launched a top-secret project at a former nuclear weapons site in the Nevada desert to test the feasibility of building a small anthrax production facility using off-the-shelf equipment easily available in hardware stores and biological supply catalogs. Codenamed Project Bacchus, a small cohort of faux terrorists, military weapons experts, succeeded in producing a few pounds of anthrax. 2 years after the Pentagon's Nevada anthrax project, someone associated with the United States Army mounted a far-reaching campaign of sending anthrax to members of Congress and key media figures, officially launching the biosecurity era. In the light of subsequent events, we cannot exclude the possibility that someone in our government carried out a false flag attack against Americans as a provocation for some larger agenda. This is not an outlandish conspiracy theory. During my uncle's presidential administration, the Joint Chiefs of Staff submitted a plan termed Operation North Woods, proposing false flag attacks, including mass murders of random American citizens, to justify an invasion of Cuba. My uncle reacted with horror to Joint Chief Chairman Lyman Lemnitzer's Northwoods briefing pitch and abruptly walked out of the presentation. "And they call us the human race," he remarked to his Secretary of State, Dean Rusk. U.S. intelligence agencies and military-industrial complex insiders initially, and ultimately wrongly, blamed the 2001 anthrax letter attacks on Saddam Hussein or Al-Qaeda, and later used similarly incorrect pretexts to launch a war against Iraq. The mailing of anthrax introduced Americans to a new enemy, more frightening than garden-variety terrorism. While terrorists could destroy key buildings and airliners, the biosecurity narrative warns that pathogens could enter any American home and invisibly slay its occupants. Germs, therefore, easily outgunned Al-Qaeda as a reliable wellspring of terror. This was the lesson Cadlick had been broadcasting for 5 years. the delivery of anthrax through the mail brought home his jeremiads. By 2020, biosecurity would altogether eclipse Islamic terrorism as the spear tip of U.S. military and foreign policy. The topic of infectious diseases suddenly became the most effective way to open government pockets. Meet the El-Hibri family. In 1998, Lebanese-born financier Ibrahim El-Hibri and his son Fuad, with former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Admiral William Crowe Jr., established a corporation called Bioport and paid the state of Michigan $25 million for its aging vaccine manufacturing campus. The purpose the El-Hibris intended to use the factory for was to manufacture anthrax vaccine for sale to the U.S. military. El-Hibri Sr. was a longtime associate of both Robert Cadillac and Admiral Crowe, who chaired the Joint Chiefs under Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush. The El-Hibris had previous success in the anthrax vaccine business, having made a small fortune by purchasing anthrax vaccines made by the UK government and reselling them at 100 times the purchase price to the Saudi Arabian government. Less than a month after taking over the Michigan-based business, Bioport signed an exclusive $29 million contract with the Pentagon to manufacture, test, bottle, and store the anthrax vaccine for American troops stationed abroad. The Secretary of the Army indemnified the factory the day before signing the contract on September 3, 1998. The El-Hibris never safety tested their concoction. They didn't have to. They had no liability for injuries. 10 months before the El-Hibris bought the plant, an FDA audit uncovered contamination problems, suspect record-keeping, and assorted security breaches at their laboratory, as well as 9 million stored doses that were adulterated. Almost as soon as Bioport was formed, it began receiving large sums from the U.S. Army to rehabilitate the anthrax plant, but it was still unable to pass an FDA audit. In 1999, they bulldozed the factory and rebuilt it at taxpayer expense. The state of Michigan sweetened the deal, but the FDA would not give its stamp of approval to the new manufacturing facility. Bioport, with a hefty lobbying team and designer furniture in its executive offices, kept crying poor and coming back to the U.S. government for additional handouts before finally falling into a death spiral around the bankruptcy drain in mid-2001. The October 2001 anthrax incidents proved the El-Hibris' salvation. The Pentagon leveraged the strange attacks, turning them into the long-awaited provocation, justifying the crusade to expand the battlefront in bioweapons research. The 1972 Biological Weapons Convention meant neither the brass nor the spooks could legally research or produce bioweapons. But the convention left open the loophole that signatories could develop dual-use vaccine and weapon technologies so long as the projects had a defensive rationale. After the anthrax attacks, vaccines suddenly became a euphemism for bioweapons and a ticket back to deep water for a beached biowarfare industry. Military planners at the Pentagon, BARDA, DARPA, and the CIA through USAID began pouring money into gain-of-function experiments. Dual-use research was suddenly in vogue. Dark Winter 2001. During June 22nd and 23rd, 2001, less than 3 months before the 9/11 attacks, the Pentagon launched a war game codenamed Operation Dark Winter at Andrews Air Force Base that emphasized the military's earnest commitment to bioweapon vaccines. Robert Cadillac, the lead organizer of this pandemic simulation, also coined its code name. The tabletop scenario simulated a smallpox attack on U.S. locations beginning in Oklahoma City, the site of a real domestic terror attack in 1995. Dark Winter participants explored strategies for imposing coercive quarantines, censorship, mandatory masking, lockdowns, and vaccination, and expanded police powers as the only rational responses to the pandemic. The failure in the Dark Winter case to quickly implement such countermeasures allowed the galloping spread of the Pentagon's imaginary smallpox epidemic to overwhelm America's response capabilities, precipitating massive civilian casualties, widespread panic, societal breakdown, and mob violence. The Pentagon summary of the exercise concluded that scarcity of vaccines to curtail the contagion spread proved the most severe limitation on management options. The Dark Winter exercise eerily predicted